Been practicing that, ain't you?
Yeah. But you know what?
She goes to Boudreaux's with us. She never gets the dietetic stuff.
But you know what? You're eating more than I am.
Yeah, I know. It shows, doesn't it?
Yep, it sure does.
I'm done. Like I said, you cannot win. We're in the book of Revelation, chapter 11. Let me ask you a general question, sort of start off today. What is your idea of the most significant thing that is impacting our world for peace? What's our biggest threat to peace? Our personal peace, as well as the world itself. Radical Islam. How many of you would think that is true? Radical Islam. Anybody else have any other ideas, since that's the right one? But Sandy?
Ignorance.
Well, that's a problem, yeah. It's kind of obvious, isn't it? Jennifer?
Persecution
is a big issue. Lisa?
The instability of our government.
Yeah, the instability not only of this government, but of the Europeans, the pigs. You know who the pigs are, right?
Yeah.
Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain are called the pigs. And they're the pigs because they have so much debt. Yes, Sharon? Well, that's always an issue, yes. That's a good one. Spiritual warfare. I learned something new last night, and I'm going to present it to you today, assuming time is allowed. Sharon?
Lack of trust in a leader. We're like sheep, and we need a leader we can trust. And we don't have...
Name a country on this planet that has a problem with their leader. That doesn't have a problem with their leader. Name a country. Yeah, Netanyahu's not real popular. Assad in Syria, Mubarak in Egypt, Gaddafi in Libya, the kings in Saudi Arabia. I mean, there is something going on globally that you should be aware of, and I believe that the Scripture speaks to it specifically. Excuse me, I got tongue tied. And so I want to look at Revelation chapter 11, verse, I think it's 7. And last time I gave a sort of an introduction to this particular passage, but I want to take it a step further, because for the first time in 40 years, I finally have made some sense, I think, out of a passage dealing with prophecy that I have not seen only one person set forth so far in all my reading. Revelation 11:7 is about two witnesses. Those two witnesses are witnesses of God. They are Jewish, or Israelites at least. We're not sure who they are. They may be somebody we don't know. They may be Elijah and Moses. They may be Elijah and Enoch. For sure, Elijah appears to be a strong candidate, either actuality or in the spirit of Elijah, such as John the Baptist. But it says when they had finished their testimony, the beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war with them and overcome them and kill them. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which mystically is called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. And the Scripture says, those from the peoples and tribes and tongues and nations will look at their dead bodies for 3.5 days and will not permit their dead bodies to be laid in a tomb. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, will celebrate, and they'll send gifts to one another because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth.
But after that, be around Christmas time when people.
Christmas.
Well, I mean, you know, like he's prophesying what he saw.
Right.
That's how, you know, no other time. I mean, I guess some other times, but when everybody's giving gifts, and I know that's not really the Jewish holiday, but I'm just saying, you know, he might not.
No, I think he's seeing people that are ecstatic. For example, I'll give you a real life example.
Oh, yeah.
What happened in 2011 that the whole world celebrated?
Bin Laden.
The death of Bin Laden. We didn't give gifts.
No, but
so
I got one.
If see how somebody said one to Luann. If in fact his death was so popular, nobody really criticized heavily the fact that we just took him out, right? I mean, without a trial or anything. I mean, basically the world justified that death, right? On what reason? Because he was evil. All right, and the world rejoiced. Did the world rejoice when Gaddafi was killed? Absolutely. Why? Because he was evil.
It could be like VJ Day.
Yeah.
Celebration.
Just a celebration. Well, what happens if two guys show up in Jerusalem and they are completely opposed to everything that's going on? And they're not only opposed to it, if you try to do anything to them, they do the same thing to you. For example, if you try to kill them, they just call fire down out of heaven and wipe you out. Or suppose that they just decide that it's not going to rain for 3.5 years anywhere on the earth. Or decide that they're going to turn the water to blood. Or if they decide to strike the earth anywhere they want to at any time with a plague so that you never know what's coming. And most of the people on the earth at that time are not believers in God, and particularly not in the God of Israel. What would be the reaction if all of a sudden somebody killed them? Sandy goes like this. In other words, thumbs up, right? Because they have, in fact, the scripture says, and what we're looking at, it says, they won't even put their bodies in a tomb. Right? They want to watch what? And make sure what?
They're
really dead, dead, dead. Kind of reminds me of the Wizard of Id. You remember the Wizard of Id and the snake that the woman's always after? No, it's B.C., isn't it? The woman always smashes the snake until there's almost nothing left. They want to focus on their television. It's not even hard to imagine, is it? Look at what happens just in today in just the political campaigns. They can take a subject and beat it ad nauseum for 3 days. I mean, that's nothing, 24 hours for them. And they'll examine everything they did, and they'll have pictures of everything they did, and all the grief that they have, and all the people that died as a result of what they did, and people will look at it and they'll say, yes! And then they'll say, I'm going to send a gift to somebody over here. I'm so excited. These are a couple of bad dudes. These are superheroes deluxe.
But these are the
for God.
For the non-believers. But
most people are non-believers now.
Yeah.
There aren't that many believers.
But is it less than 50%?
At the time of this happening, probably less than
5%. No, I'm sorry. I was thinking
about today's. Okay, today's time. Yes, Christians are definitely less than 50%. We're about, I think, a fourth of the world or something like that. Sandy?
I'm wondering if the world people at that time think that these two witnesses are ruining their utopia, that now that they're dead, we can get back on with,
protecting the environment and all those things they're going to do and so forth that to make the world better. Well, hold on to that for a minute. We encounter a being in this passage called the beast. The beast, by the way, is a pretty big theme in prophecy. Did you know that? And last week we talked about the Bible predicts that right before the return of Jesus Christ, there will be a one world kingdom. Remember? The 10 kings that are the 10 toes of the statue that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed. Well, Daniel also had a dream later in chapter 7, and that's where I want to go right now. This beast is described as the beast that comes out of the pit. But I want to give you an overview of this beast, and then I'm going to try to define what it may be. Daniel chapter 7.
You know, the way the news media just harps and harps and harps,
It's just like when 9/11 happened. It was just, you seen so much, you just wanted to be over with. You know what
yeah.
I mean? You're sick of it.
Sure.
So when it does happen, and the news media is constant, you're kind of glad it's over with.
Right. Don't you think the media is actually going to have their cameras trained on these two guys, and when some people die, when they try to attack them?
Oh, yeah.
In chapter 7, starting at, I'm going to skip some, but let me give you an overview of chapter 7. Daniel has a vision, and he has a vision of four beasts. And these four beasts are classified as such. The first one is a vision of a beast that is a lion. In fact, it says in verse 4, the first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking till the wings were plucked, etc., etc., and it stood on its feet like a man. The second beast was like a bear. And all this is important, by the way. The third beast was like a leopard. And then we come to a fourth beast, and this starts at verse 7. And it says this, "After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying and exceedingly strong," or extremely strong, "and it had large iron teeth, and it devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. All right. "And when I was contemplating the 10 horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them. And 3 of the first horns were pulled out by the roots. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boasts." Daniel's vision that he had in a dream was of four beasts. The fourth beast is the one that caught his attention. Now, historically, those four beasts have been defined as this. The first one is Babylon, the lion. All right, we're going to talk more about that in a minute. The second, the bear, is the Medo-Persian Empire. And then the third one is Alexander the Great. And the last beast is Rome, and then what flows from that. All right. Now, Daniel says in verse 19, "Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and the meaning of the 10 horns that are on his head, and the other horn which came up," etc., etc. "Thus he said," verse 23, "the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth," which lets you know that the first three were kingdoms on the earth, as I define. "And it shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth and will tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he'll be different from the previous three and will subdue 3 kings, and he will speak out against the Most High, wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law." And that's important. Remember that. "Times and law. And they will be given into his hand for time, times, and a half a time." How long is time, times, and a half a time? And so when is this going to take place? The tribulation period for what part of it? Last half, more than likely. And then it says, "Then the sovereignty," verse 27, "the dominion and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One." That's Israel primarily, but it's also us. "His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and of all the dominions will serve and obey him." And at this point of the revelation ended, "As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming me, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself." So Daniel sees in his vision this fourth kingdom. This fourth kingdom is described as a dreadful and terrible. It's different from all the other beasts, etc., and it has 10 horns. Now, Revelation expands on this in 4 different places. All right? So if you would, I want you to turn to Revelation chapter 12.
So why does he keep the matter to himself?
Hmm?
Why does he keep the matter to himself?
Because he doesn't know what it really means.
fear, he had fear in him?
Yeah, he's fearful of what he sees, and I don't know exactly what it means by why he kept it to himself, because obviously he wrote it down, right?
Yes.
Okay, Chad, before you get into that, starting on the next scripture, you had said that the fourth beast was wrong.
Right.
Okay, so are we still talking about wrong here?
Well, as I'm going to show you as we expand on what the Bible talks about, this is a kingdom which is composed of all four of these beasts that grows into a different kingdom. In other words, Rome is the immediate one, but then all of a sudden you have 10 horns. Okay? The 10 horns are the ones that reach into our lifetime. But there's a lot in Revelation, so hang with me. In Revelation chapter 12, we see another vision. And it says here, verse 3, then another sign appeared in heaven, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. And on his heads were 7 diadems. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth to the child, she might devour her child. We're going to study that in depth. But essentially what that's telling you is you've got this dragon, and this dragon is identified as a person. And who is that person? Satan himself. Notice it says, verse 7, there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place found in them for them in heaven. And the great dragon, which was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, he was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Alright? So, we have a picture here in chapter 12. The first thing we see in chapter 11 is there's a mention of a beast that comes out of the abyss. Well, when you get through, you're going to realize that the beast itself didn't come out of the abyss, because the beast is representative of a world government. And we'll get there, trust me. Maybe not today, but hopefully. But the beast that comes out of the abyss is a statement that you might say that idea came straight out of where?
Hell.
Exactly. It's the way that Revelation is stating it to you. Because this beast that comes out, if it's Satan incarnate, yes, he could come out of the pit, come out of the abyss. But the idea of this world kingdom ultimately came from the pits of the abyss, from Satan's domain. Now, we have more ideas given in chapter 13. And the dragon, that beast, stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I heard a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads. And upon his horns were 10 diadems, and on the heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw, listen closely, was like a leopard. He was like a bear. His feet were like a bear. And his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. So now we get an expanded deal. First of all, we see Satan as a dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. Now we see this beast again. The first one came out of the pit, out of the abyss. This one seems to rise up out of the sea. Most commentators say that's the Mediterranean area, which is important to our analysis. And now all of a sudden, this red dragon is a composite. And it's a composite of what?
All of them.
All four kingdoms. Okay? You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he says, I saw one of his heads that was slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. They worshiped the dragon because he gave authority to the beast. What do you think Satan's main desire is? What does he want more than anything? To be worshiped on this planet. He tempted Jesus with that, right? He said, if you'll just fall down and worship me, I'll give you kingdoms of the world. And so, all of a sudden, he has what he has desired for all of the human time that we know about on this planet. And that is to be worshiped. Again, we have 7 heads and 10 horns. Are you with me? And then it goes on and tells about the beast and how he There's a third beast, a beast that comes up out of the land, which is the false prophet, and we'll talk about that later. Now go over to Revelation chapter 17. John has a vision in Revelation 17 of what he calls a harlot, Mystery Babylon. And he says this. Let me go back a little bit. It says, verse 1. Come here and I'll show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. Now let me kind of shortcut this, though I'll spend a lot of time on it when we get there. He sees a woman dressed up as a harlot. I'm assuming jewels and makeup and all of that kind of stuff, and most of you know what that would look like, I guess.
Who is most?
Yeah.
Some of you might recognize a harlot. It's getting a little harder right now, don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't be fooled by John's language. John tells you most of the time in Revelation what he's talking about. When you come down to verse 18, he says, the woman whom you saw is the great city, right? Which reigns over the kings of the earth. So when you go back here and you're reading about this harlot that is bedecked with all these jewels and appears to be a harlot and has committed immorality, then you know that this particular city is one in which blasphemy is prominent, where they're ruling over the kings of the earth. This is the central city in the world. And if you track it through, you'll come to the conclusion, I think, that this city is a city that we call Babylon. That city still exists today. Isn't it interesting that in the age in which you live, the most prominent nations in the news today are Babylon, which is Iraq, Persia, which is Iran, and Greece, which is the great Greek Empire. Those three kind of symbolize all the issues that are going on in the world. The financial issues we talked about, the threat of Iran, and don't believe your commentators on TV, they will nuke us if they get a chance. And all the threats they give to us on our economic side with the oil and Straits of Hormuz and so forth. But John wants you to know that there is a city in the future which is grossly immoral, which is the center of the persecution of true believers. And this city is decked out, and she says that she rides on, let's see, and he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and ten horns. You've heard that before, right? The woman is riding the beast. So how does a city ride a beast?
The city is in control.
The city is in control of a one world government. It's from which the Antichrist rules. Now I want you to notice something. It says the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. And on her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. There is no mistaking. If you understand ancient history, and even some modern history, that the greatest false religion on the planet arose from Babylon. All false religions come from Babylon. And she's called an abomination. And then he says, I will tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast and of the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not. That makes sense, doesn't it? So it says what? It was. What would that mean?
It used to exist.
Used to exist, but it
does not.
And is about to come up out of the abyss. That takes us back to Revelation 11, doesn't it? The beast that came out of the abyss. Now listen closely. And go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the earth, will wonder where they see the beast. And he was, and is not, and will come. This passage has been frustrating to me for 40 years. And I think I figured it out. I'm in Revelation chapter 17.
Verse 8.
Thank you. Yes, Rod.
Chuck, there was something interesting that happened this week that I think we need to keep our eyes on in regard to this woman, this ecumenical movement which will ride on the political beast.
Okay.
But I think this woman is the ecumenical church, which is going to be like the ancient church that persecuted and killed and Jews and Christians in the name of God.
Well, they do. I would agree with you on this, Rod. For sure, this woman is one that her predominant characteristic is her persecution and killing of the saints. That's the main thing that she does. That's what the cup she holds. She holds a cup of blood. Those are where the martyrs come from who say, "How long, O Lord, will you not avenge us of our blood?" All right?
Well, what I was going to mention was that in the news this week, there's a big movement right now where one of the major churches of the world is pushing this ecumenical movement and has invited the Anglican Church to come back home, quote unquote,
right,
join back with us, yeah. And this is something that I think we're going to see in the near future. This movement, I've heard from other people that are in that movement that it's a big thing going on, and so it you know, this ecumenical movement may already be started.
Right,
it's ecumenical.
Ecumenical means worldwide. You just combine all religions together into one movement.
But the reason that group is doing that is because they're moving away from where they were because what their church was getting away from Scripture.
Right. I don't know enough about the movement to comment beyond that. But here's the mystery of what I've been dealing with and why this is such a struggle. I want you to listen closely. First of all, you need to understand, or I need to understand, or hopefully we understand, that when it talks about this beast, it's talking about a world government, and at the same time, it's talking about a person. Does that make sense? All right? And you'll see that. I mean, it's sort of like you have to shake your head, because all of a sudden, it's talking about this world kingdom, then all of a sudden, it's talking about he, and he did this, and he did that, and you're saying, what's going on? Well, the leader, the Antichrist, the ultimate false Messiah, is in fact the leader of this final world government. And here's where you get that authority. Listen closely. Here's the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, just to comment on that, many commentators believe that the seven mountains are the seven hills of Rome. And so therefore, Babylon here is Rome. I don't believe that's true. The seven mountains represent clearly something else. First of all, seven hills are not seven mountains, even though Rome is famous for its seven hills. The seven mountains were defined by Daniel. You remember when the stone from the mountain came and smashed the statue? He set up the authority for the fact that a mountain represents a kingdom. But I don't need that. I'm just commenting on that. All right? Because here's what he said. And they are seven kings. They are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is. The other has not yet come. When he comes, he must remain a little while. All right? Is that mysterious?
Yes.
All right. There are two different approaches to the seven kings. Some say that it is seven kings that represent Rome. But that's a Rome-centered focus on this passage, and I don't believe Rome has a lot to do with it, absent what they did. But let me give you the list of what most commentators think are the world empires. The first one is Egypt. Egypt ruled the world and was the most predominant time from 2920 B.C. to 525 B.C. All right? There's seven kings. Five are, or were, remember? One is. Number two, does anybody know what the second one is? Assyria. Do you know where Assyria is? And it's not Syria today. It's Assyria. It's to the east of all that. It actually is the same area in which you get Babylon and Iran and those particular areas. Assyria is that. Assyria exists or existed pretty much from 2300. Let's see, 2300 to 608 BC. Okay, now Assyria conquered Egypt in somewhere between, I couldn't find the exact date, but between 705 and 681 BC, a fellow named Sennacherib threw Egypt out of Israel. Do you know who Sennacherib is?
Mean dude.
Mean dude. Yeah, he was a mean dude. He was the guy who took the 10 tribes of Israel and took them back to out of Israel. Conquered them. Alright? The third kingdom, or king, was Babylon. Babylon basically existed a pretty short time, believe it or not. 606 BC to 538 BC. Alright? Number four. Anybody guess? Medes and the Persians. Medes and the Persians, 538 to 330 BC. All right. Who knows number five?
Greece.
Alexander the Great, 330 BC to 146 BC. All right. So in this passage, it says that there have been five kings or kingdoms that have existed prior to John's writing of this, and these are the ones that are known throughout the world. Alright? Now there's something common with all of these. First of all, every one of them conquered the other one before it, or absorbed it. Did you know that? Secondly, they were centered in the, and this is really important, they were centered, their kingdoms were centered in their control of what? Jerusalem, thank you. Jerusalem and the Holy Land. All of these were. When Greece and Alexander the Great conquered, well, they all weren't centered, but they controlled Jerusalem and the Middle East.
And they were located in that general area.
Yeah, they were all in that area around the Mediterranean. All right? And that's really important to understand this passage from what I'm going to tell you. I'm going to run out of time. Number six, John said there's one is.
Rome.
Rome existed from 146 BC, and some of these dates are not hard dates, but this is when Greece was supposedly was finished. Alexander the Great died soon after this. But 146 BC, does anybody know when Rome stopped? Yes. This is important. 1453 AD. The reason you're saying the 4th century is when they divided Rome into two sections. The western section and the eastern section. The western section was conquered by the barbarians. That would be the places you know today is Italy, Spain, etc. All right? But the eastern section continued on. And that eastern section that continued on has got a name. Does anybody know what it is? That's where it's centered. Constantinople, which is known today, I don't know if I spell it right, as the Byzantine Empire. Did you know that?
Nope.
You do now. If you go to any internet site, and I didn't went to a bunch of them, here's what it says. The Byzantine Empire was the Eastern Roman Empire during the periods of the late antiquity and the Middle Ages, centered on the capital of Constantinople, known simply as the Roman Empire. It was a direct continuation of the ancient Roman state and maintained Roman state traditions. Byzantium is today extinguished from ancient Rome as far as oriented toward Greek culture, characterized by Christianity rather than Roman paganism, which is because Constantine came in 325 and declared all Rome were Christians. You didn't have a choice anymore. If you were part of Rome, he became a Christian, so he thought it'd be a good idea if everybody was. It existed for more than 1,000 years, from the 4th century, which is the date you gave me, until the 1453. Now here's something that I have never seen before, and I'm going to probably have to leave it to you and then come back next week and fill in the gaps. This scripture in Revelation 17 says this: there are 7 kings, 5 have fallen, 1 is, and the other has not yet come. Who is the other has not yet come? I have never seen a commentator except one, and it's this guy that Jenny brought me, Jenny Bill Dill, that is the Islamic Antichrist, that finally they opened my eyes as to what's going on. The kingdom that followed was called the Ottoman Empire. Have you heard of the Ottoman Empire? One of the greatest world kingdoms that's ever existed. It conquered Constantinople in 1435. And it existed from 1293 to 1923 A.D. 1293 A.D. till 1923, 700 years. What is it? 630 years. Why is that all important? Because I'm going to have to leave you. I'm out of time. The focus of the seven-headed beast is continuous. From the time that it started in Egypt all the way down to the Ottoman Empire, all the way down to the 1923. The beast that was and is and was not, but will be again. The other thing that is focused on all 7 of these is they are all centered on Jerusalem. Here's the point. And I'll talk about both alternatives of what this final world kingdom is. This kingdom was a pure Islamic kingdom. And the scripture says it was and it is not, but it will be again. See you next week. See you next week.
Who's that by?
Joel Richardson. It's a great read.
I have a book for you.
Oh, great. Hi, Connie.
Thank you.
Huh? Oh, cool. You did it. Hey, Robin. How you doing, man? Happy New Year.